The time for empty talk is over. Now arrives the hour of action.
It's time for the John DePietro Show here on News Talk, WNRI, 1380 AM and 99.9 and 95.1 FM.
He's a special kind of sentinel.
Mr. DePietro, who is in the eye of the storm.
Suddenly, John DePietro became the story.
Radio talk show host, John DePietro.
All right, here we go, folks. Welcome. Political Monday on this side, and it is. Definition of a rainy, drainy, dreary Monday, I should say. Rainy and drainy. This portion of the John DePietro Show, folks, is brought to you by Propane Plus for all your propane needs. Heating and cooling. Two locations, Rehoboth and also East Greenwich. Call Tim Johnson and his family today at Propane Plus, 401-885-4209. 885-4209. Propane Plus, all your heating and cooling. The leading provider of propane is Propane Plus. Call them today, 401-885-4209. They do underground tanks, full service, your one source for all your propane needs, automatic delivery, extensive selection of tanks, all propane appliances, satellite tank monitoring, locked in rates through the Plus plan. And also installation of heaters, generators, water heaters, pool heaters, fireplaces, boilers, and furnace. Propane Plus. Call them today. 401-885-4209. Well, folks, it is a political Monday. Let's bring him on. He is the managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com. We want to say good afternoon to our friend Justin Katz. Good afternoon, Justin.
Good afternoon, John. Great to be with you.
Hey, Justin, I want to start off. Yesterday, to me, Congressman Cicilline, dream come true. They'll definitely send out a fundraising email. I'm sure today's he's making the rounds. People like, hey, I saw you. I mean, in his world, President Trump, whether he meant to or not, but he actually, you know, helped him out a little bit by giving him credibility. It's something that Congressman Cicilline has been working towards, and he finally achieved it yesterday with President Trump mentioning Congressman Cicilline negatively in a tweet. That's worth a lot. That's something that everybody sees in Washington. It's huge. It's like gold. And this all comes on yesterday with Congressman Cicilline on Fox News Sunday with Chris Wallace. One of the more interesting parts of that still he really won't address is there's no guarantee that they're going to have the votes to even get this out of the House. But he just has become full-time, to me, in my mind, and he is synonymous with the Democrat attack dog efforts to try to remove this president.
He's definitely worked hard for that position to be the guy who might get the name check from President Trump. And I agree. I'm sure there have been more than one email going out fundraising. You know, did you see what the president said? David needs your help. You know, that sort of tone of email and asking for money. And, yeah, he's He makes me think of Senator Whitehouse, although he's cooled it to some degree, but for a number of years, he was a major left-wing attack dog for, you know, silencing corporations and environmental stuff. And it comes to feel like an indication that the Democrats in Rhode Island feel his seat is pretty safe for them. So it could be, in some regards, it could be a win-win. I mean, the president, the more the impeachment trial seems like it's just a political battle between sides, the better he does. And I believe his approval ratings are actually up today. So he's got the president benefits by making this political and raising doubts in the minds of Fox News viewers, the tweet being, of course, that Fox shouldn't have on people like David Cicilline. And I think probably Cicilline benefits from it at home, as you say, and certainly nationally it raises profile among the people he cares about.
I think it definitely does. And I think it's an added to when he's going to, you know, speak somewhere, they'll kind of throw that in as he's walking around the halls of Congress and so forth on the Hill with him and his staff. And I'll give him that. He certainly earned it. If anyone that follows him the way I do on Twitter, several times a day, he is tweeting at President Trump. He's kind of what normally would be called trolling, but he is full time engaged, or someone is on his staff, of constantly trying to get the president's attention, and he finally did. And what do you think? You know, I come back to Justin. It's getting a lot of heavy treatment here in the press. Channel 12, obviously, there's a story in the Journal and Channel 10, but I don't. I don't hear anyone talk about what you and I talk about is I come back to if someone were to say, what is his top accomplishment, Congressman Cicilline, for 2019 as far as just improving the lives of the people in Rhode Island? I think he's become totally within the beltway. There was another story that Ted Nesi was putting out that, you know, he has certainly cemented his role that he's against the giant tech companies. But again, I don't see, other than just earning his credentials more as an inside beltway player so that, you know, that enables him to maybe get invited to the right cocktail parties, I don't see how in any way that benefits the people of the First District.
Those are my thoughts exactly. Although I think increasingly, partly because of the internet, I mean, I started with cable news years and years ago, we're increasingly a national audience. And this strikes me locally when you see events locally and things that directly affect people's livelihoods and how they live their daily lives at home get much less attention than political jabs back and forth in Washington. So I think partly it's a reflection of that dynamic because the audiences are so big nationally, that's where all the attention goes, and it gets people revved up in kind of a almost like a sports atmosphere, your team versus my team. And in Rhode Island, for our congressman, being on that team is more of a benefit than a hindrance. And so I think if you asked a lot of David Cicilline's voters, and even people who were intending to vote against him, you'll get commentary where the voters don't necessarily care that they can't name anything he's done specifically with respect to the state of Rhode Island. They're more interested in, hey, that's the guy the president doesn't like, or that's the guy who doesn't like the president. And it's some regards is a sad state of affairs considering what Congress is supposed to do as a representative organization. But I have a feeling that's where we are. And I think he's been savvy in picking that up. And so if Rhode Island were to lose a congressional seat and you get the Langevin versus Cicilline battle, I think you'll see that he's picked the right path here. And every now and then from Langevin, you get the sense that he knows he's a little bit behind on the attacking Trump, but he can't seem to bring himself to do it, at least not to keep up with David Cicilline.
That's exactly right. Folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. Our segment is Political Monday with Justin Katz, managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com. Justin, it happened on Friday, and then I was seeing some of the media coverage of it. 14 protesters arrested at the Rhode Island State House. This is this group that charged in when the Boston Globe was trying to have a discussion with Governor Raimondo. It's this group called Sunrise, and apparently, you know, you had 30 demonstrators staged a sit-in at the State House. There was a lot of footage of them kind of marching around, and then a bunch of them show up at the State House, and they insist, and they wanted to get arrested, and it's all part of, they wanted the governor to sign a fossil fuel pledge, endorse a Green New Deal for Rhode Island, and, you know, Governor Raimondo, she took time to meet with them on Friday morning, which I think is interesting, and then wouldn't sign it, but then said, you know, I think it's great these young people are standing up in there. They're fighting on an issue as important as climate change. And then, you know, Sunrise, these are the same people that were making the rounds. I thought that a couple things. Senator Dianne Feinstein, that famous video earlier in the year, I thought she put them right in their place, that I'm not going to be bullied into this. This is a tactic. What you're presenting will never pass the Senate. And have all these young people and script them. And I thought Feinstein started out well. This is the AOC. And I don't know. This I come back to, is it a double standard? There are other groups that I know that would love to meet with the governor, but she won't give them the time of day. But what do you make of the protest and the arrests and just the marching and the carrying on?
Well, there are it's all of a piece with that. There are groups that would love to meet with the governor. They would love to get the coverage. But even if they did exactly the same sort of thing, exactly the same number of people, the tone of the coverage would be different, and the amount of coverage would be different. I mean, you know that, having been involved with Tea Party activities over the years, the numbers are always played down, and the reaction is always muted, and they're not going to get an audience with the people they would want to get an audience with. But what strikes me about this, you alluded to it a little bit with referring to Dianne Feinstein, the idea that this is the big issue that gets hundreds of people out marching in the street is in some respects confusing because it's an issue on which a lot of the people in power, the governor herself, she used it as an opportunity to brag about what she's done. They support the message. They're doing as much as I think they can. If they do much more, they're going to start really doing real, real damage to the economy and therefore to their political prospects. So there's not going to be much motion on this. And yet this is an org, this gets people, gets kids especially and some older folks out there marching in the streets and trying to get arrested. It has the air of a well-financed and well-organized operation that's been working for years trying to rev up the ability to get people to do this sort of thing. And I think you see this, you mentioned, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez with the Green New Deal earlier in the year, completely ludicrous legislation. Some of it either rushed out or poorly considered. You know, there was language about cow farts affecting the environment in that report.
That's right.
And then there were, you know, the Mitch McConnell in the Senate, I believe it was, actually called their bluff and tried to have a vote. And it was interesting to watch that the advocates actually didn't want to vote.
That's right. Yes.
So it's all a put up. And so here you go. You've got this protest with hundreds of people. The main spokesperson for the Sunrise Group is running for office in Rhode Island. He was a protester at the Wyatt detention facility. And I can't help but there's no direct connection that I've found yet, but I can't help but see this connected with Matt Brown and the political co-op.
Yep.
There's a lot of money and a lot of organization going into this political theater. And it does get the attention because the journalists all support it, and it gets political attention because a lot of politicians around here support it. I'm not sure it moves the needle with anybody else, though. I think most people it has a feel of this is just, you know, kids being kids. And I think that's about as far as it's going to go in the public. But it might get the governor moving, you know, feeling she has a little bit more space to do what she wants to do anyway and hurt our economy in the name of environmentalism.
Who's the individual, Justin, with Sunrise who's running for office? Maybe I overlooked that.
It was David Morales.
David Morales. Okay.
He was some kind of spokesperson with Sunrise, and he's running for, I think it's McKiernan seat.
Okay. I think it's another example, though, how because of who they are, and they're given special treatment. And the same way I come back to the way they charged in on that Boston Globe situation. And there's countless other groups that we could name. Never mind if it was a Tea Party, that they would have had the state police in there, the Capitol Police. They would have dragged them out, manhandled them. Instead, she meets with them. She tries to be complimentary. And before we move on to the next topic, Justin Katz, I think I go back to it was in the summertime in one of the debates. That it was, and I'll give him credit, it was Joe Biden that stepped up and said, because Elizabeth Warren talking about climate change and everyone else, and, you know, the clock is ticking, and what is it, we have 6 years left or 11 years left or 10 years left. And I think it was Biden that said, you know, I think it's important, but at the same time, I think we need to remember that the United States only is accountable or is responsible, I should say, for 14% of the carbon footprint of the world. I mean, if that's the United States is 14%, then what's the Rhode Island one is even less than that. Like it's all like a fraud to me. It sounds good. I'm not saying that they haven't made good inroads, but some of the things they want to do. If some of the things that Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders with this Green New Deal that they want, if they want to implement, it would put a lot of small businesses out of business because of the type of changes that they want to make, whether it be for their vehicles, how they get their energy, what they produce. It's not based in reality by any stretch of the imagination, not even close. It's fantasy. And I just think that I'm hard pressed to think of another group that is allowed to kind of carry on in this fantasy land type of world that they are allowed to and they're taken seriously.
Well, I mean, you can think of others across the country, say like Black Lives Matter a few years ago did many similar things.
Good point, good point.
Take over. But what's interesting there in all this, you see with Feinstein, you see with Biden, is across the country, there is some need for these politicians to at least give lip service to businesses and small businesses and ability of the economy to operate and jobs for people. We happen to be behind a sort of a curtain here in Rhode Island where this is just – this is what everybody, I mean, they just, it's almost a religion around here that you just believe in this. So that a lot of politicians, like a Governor Raimondo, doesn't even have to offer much by way of lip service for that. And it is going to have huge impacts. Also on Friday, it didn't get any coverage that I've seen from the New Providence Journal, but the Rhode Island Center for Freedom and Prosperity tried to bring some attention to this forthcoming, in the next few weeks you'll be hearing about it, this transportation and climate initiative, which is essentially going to increase gas taxes. That's going to be a relatively small hit, but these are the it pales in comparison with, you know, the Green New Deal and all of these things, these policies that these groups are pushing. But one thing that's interesting about the transportation climate initiative is it's a regional thing. So it's only the northeast of the United States are getting together, the states are, to impose new gas taxes on themselves. Because you couldn't float this across the country. And it's for the same reason you see politicians like Biden or Feinstein kind of trying to straddle the line and push back a little bit so they're not drawn into the extremeness. But again, it's just like with David Cicilline. Around here, it plays well for the politicians, and so they'll keep pushing it.
Folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. Our segment is Political Monday. We're speaking with Justin Katz, managing editor, OceanStateCurrent.com. Justin, I also think I like the Journal doing these stories on this Wexford building, and they even wrote an editorial, Wexford searches for more tenant. They write, build it and they will come, we were assured. Taxpayers have helped build the Wexford Innovation Complex on a bare patch of land freed up, the moving of the 195 land. Talked about high-paying jobs coming in. They got the land for free, $4.5 million. They got 40 spaces, a new $43 million state garage built courtesy of the Rhode Island taxpayers. And then they predicted, the state said, oh, we should have 800 full-time workers in the building. And instead, right now, they're trying to fill at least 66,000 square feet of space. What are your thoughts on that?
My first thought is this is a well-timed warning as we start to talk about hear about a soccer stadium in Pawtucket, where once again they're saying, oh, it's going to bring – it's not just the soccer stadium. That's only $45 million. Across the river there's going to be another $200-something million worth of development for housing and office space. And it's the same sort of feel you get to that. I mean, here, the sticker price on Wexford is not the total. As you mentioned, Nate, that state taxpayers built a garage that was not included in the supposed subsidies to Wexford. And a lot of the tenants, if you look into it, have received their own subsidies. And that's kind of, there was a report at Patrick Anderson in the Providence Journal at the end of November kind of slipped into that Thanksgiving haze of news reporting. And and the editorial this week referred to that. He detailed some of the organizations that are involved, and I bet you it wouldn't take much digging at all to find some kind of connection to state subsidies with all of them. So in 2016, for example, when Wexford was first announced, I did some reporting on how they were, it was almost like a package deal with Wexford, Brookings Institution, which Governor Raimondo brought in to help develop our economic plan, and the CIC, the Cambridge Innovation Centers. They've done this in other states. They go around, they get the subsidies, they push it, and that's their main tenant is the CIC group. But then, you know, you throw in others like Brown University in there, very heavily subsidized by taxpayers. Johnson & Johnson, they've got office space that they're not even using, but they were heavily subsidized by the state. Even right down to some of the people using CIC office space, you know, you've got wind energy businesses, and my favorite, just because it's such an indication, is the Boston Globe is actually at the Wexford building.
That's right.
And they were recently in the headlines because they're getting a lot of funding from the Rhode Island Commerce Corporation.
Yeah.
Is behind the whole Wexford thing. So it starts to feel like yet another kind of political theater kind of a thing where they say, we'll build this and they'll come. So we build it and then they devote all of these taxpayer resources saying, hey, could you move into the building, please? You know, I said some of them, as the editorial noted, moved jobs almost literally across the street from where they were to the Wexford building to make it look like it's working. And yet they still have two floors, I think it was, at the top of the building, probably the prime floors up there with the best views, and they can't fill those because the problem isn't that we didn't have this high-end office space. The problem is that the economy here is in the dumps, and we can't fix it because that would affect the insider giveaway system. I think that's basically what we're seeing here, and it's good to have that reminder over and over again, especially as other projects come online.
You know, you're exactly right. And even, boy, they're big on the press conference and Johnson & Johnson and so forth, but that hasn't panned out. And now this number of jobs has not panned out. I think you raise a very good point about trying to be realistic with that soccer stadium, Justin. Do you think that's also a warning sign to go tread lightly on that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when you look into something about the numbers that were cited for the soccer stadium just don't seem to add up. I think it was $45 million or so for the stadium itself. Then it was something similar for public. No, it was $90 million from taxpayers for infrastructure. So, again, we hear that parking and a pedestrian bridge across the river. And then the rest is just this hazy, you know, hotels, housing, businesses, shops, you know, all that kind of stuff. But you know, every one of those is going to be the same thing as here, where somebody somewhere is getting a public incentive to open up or to build a little building on that property as to make it look like this project is successful. And so what you end up is, and by the way, that's going to be funded in large part with tax increment financing, which means the increase in taxes goes to pay for the project, not to pay for public services that are needed because of the development and all that kind of thing. And so that's the big – so we're going to be subsidizing companies to develop land and then taking the taxes they pay to pay for the land that we subsidized in the first place. It becomes a big scheme, and it's hard to tell. You know, to some degree, it's purely political. On the other hand, you've got labor unions getting to build all these projects. So it's just taxpayer money in this cycle of funding and giving it back and funding some more. And meanwhile, we've just building up more and more space that isn't getting used because it's not a good place to do business or to live.
Folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro speaking with Justin Katz, managing editor, OceanStateCurrent.com. Justin, speaking of overestimating, so they pushed through the whole sports betting, and they had a lot going on the mobile app, and I still don't think it's right. And now Dan Harrop, and I give him credit, the fact that he's challenging the way they went about it. But what also is such a glaring admission that no one ever seems to be held accountable. And you go inside the numbers that the state had budgeted almost $23 million in revenue this year, and they find it's going to be under $10 million. Less, their estimate was off by 50%, which is in private business would result in termination. Of course, no one loses their job. Probably going to bring in about $9.4 million. So then they have to completely cut their revenue estimate to like half of what they thought it was going to be. But so much of when they're pushing this stuff is because they promise a big number and then they don't get the numbers and then they just casually, oh, okay, sorry about that. You know, I guess we were wrong. We were saying 23 million. Instead, it's closer to 9 million, which is, as I said, unheard of in the private sector. You'd be off by double of what it's supposed to be. But what do you make of the fact that this lawsuit now is, in fact, going forward?
Well, I'm glad that there are folks like Dan Harrop out there pushing these things, because otherwise the state will, politicians will just do what they want. It's clear, I mean, his case is that the Rhode Island Constitution requires a vote of the state voters and local voters where the gambling is happening for any expansion of gambling. And that's unquestionably what's going on here, because the formula that the state distributes the money from sports gambling to itself, to the organizations that run it, and to the localities like Tiverton and Lincoln that host it, that formula is completely different from either table games or video slots, which are written into law, and those are the two types of gambling that were approved by voters. What strikes me here, and what I, in some ways this is just the way the legal system works, but Dan Harrop had to prove that he placed a bet and lost it in order to have standing to challenge the law. So the argument being, I wouldn't have lost this money if the state hadn't approved sports gambling, therefore I can challenge sports gambling, seems to me a little bit peculiar, because really the problem here is that we, as the people of Rhode Island, were deprived of our constitutional right to vote on an expansion of gambling. Now, I suspect it would have gone the way they wanted it to go if they had gone through the steps of doing that. But of course, that's a, you ramp up the campaign, and as you say, they're not getting the money that they thought they were going to get in the first place. So, that, running a campaign would take more off the top. But that's what's really striking here is how just the Constitution doesn't really mean what it means. It means what the governor and her group want to say it means, in order to push through a policy that they're estimating way beyond the revenue they're actually going to get.
I think that's accurate. And if anything, I sometimes think they just get so far down the road and they feel, let's just go ahead with it and we'll just deal with it if it falls short and try to get the money pumping in. And listen, whenever they get these types of things, that also then means more jobs, and then they can dictate how many jobs they want, you know, over at Twin River, even though they're battling with Twin River now on the whole mobile app thing. And some of the, one of the problems with the old mobile app that I understand, there were people listening to us that are far more familiar, but you have to go there, get your app set up. So what you have sometimes is, I know of someone who has an app, and then they take bets from people from out of state who is doing it like that. But at the same time, I spoke to someone who said over the weekend that the biggest action that this area probably will see for the month of December. The game took place on Friday night, and it was PCURI, and the line was 3. And because of the way it's set up, you can't bet on local college sports. But I heard with the, the local bookies, that took in more action than anything. And then never, let alone, URI won. They destroyed PC on Friday night. They won a lot more than that. But what I was told was, when it comes down to it, the illegal betting is still, it's huge. If anything, they've green-lighted it more. You don't have to pay taxes on it. No one knows how much money you're putting down. The money can just roll over. It's not like then you run over there and collect your earnings. And maybe they thought that they were going to get more of that action. But if anything, the people that, what I understand, are making a killing right now are all the illegal bookmakers.
Well, it wouldn't be surprising when the government goes ahead and does something, opening up sports gambling, it sends a signal that this is all right.
Yes.
To do. There's nothing wrong with this. If you're doing it illegally, it's more like almost like evading a toll or going through a parking lot instead of waiting at a red light. You're betting on something the state has said you shouldn't bet on, but it's still the same thing that the state's saying is just fine. So it wouldn't be surprising if it were the case that people were getting the message, okay, gambling is just fine now, sports gambling included, and then saying, but, I want to bet on college basketball because it's more fun, more interesting, or whatever, and the state won't let me do that, so I'll just go use this illegal bookie here, and that way I get all the extra benefits of not paying taxes and so on and so forth. These are, the complications you expect when the state says we're going to horn in on illegal activity in order to cash in on the Pottersville syndrome in Rhode Island.
That's a good way to look at it as well. Folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. Speaking of lawsuits, Justin Katz, touch on, I had Chris Maxwell on last week, and they're feeling pretty good and feeling a light. They're going to live to see another day regarding the truck tolls. They raise a lot of good points, though, because I don't think people recognize, and there'd be no reason that you would, unless there are people that are maybe in a different type of occupation, such as sales or different people like that, or I know like some of the home caregivers that have to go out, and they get a sense that how much the state is under construction. Maxwell says, and I've heard this as well, there's so much money at DOT that what should have just been small repairs, they are completely digging up, redigging the roads. When you have people that live, let's just say, in the East Bay in a certain pocket of the world, they think, okay, so our area of the state has some construction. But if you drive around the state, it is, I never remember a time when there's been so many construction projects. Many times when you go by, maybe one or two people working, if that, and a lot of times I don't see anyone working there. But the people on the inside know that apparently they just feel so flush with money that a lot of things that could have just been simple repair and maintenance become full scale, dig it up, pave the whole thing over again. Obviously, it's so much more expensive, lucrative, overtime, everything else. It just seems to be a feeding frenzy right now on the roads, and part of it is because they feel that they have all the money flowing in from the tolls.
Oh, the tolls and all the whole system by which Raimondo tried to shuffle money. And you could see that happening. I mean, it's difficult if you allocated the money for all of the little projects that need doing, or the lesser projects. It's difficult to organize that. It's much easier to say, okay, we're going to do a big project on this stretch of road. And as you say, it's really expensive to do road work, mainly because of union rules and the expenses of that. But the thing with the tolls that strikes me, again, it's almost a pretend we didn't say what we said kind of a thing, or pretend the law isn't what it is. I mean, when the tolls were implemented, I don't think you could have watched the news coverage or the public debate and not seen that the idea here, the promise here was, look, we can take money from out-of-state truckers rather than taxing our own local people. I mean, that was key to the whole discussion. And that's the hinge of this particular lawsuit. And just for some detail on it, the question right now is not the merits of the case. The headlines tend to be, you know, victory for truckers. This is just finding the right court in which for them to make their argument. And so they're going to be able to go ahead in federal court, which typically, you know, the rule of thumb in Rhode Island is if you're going against the government, you kind of have to get into federal court. And they're also, there's their complaint is that from state to state, Rhode Island is messing with interstate commerce, which it is. And it's unfortunate we have to make that kind of a point, because you would hope Rhode Islanders would say, hey, you're raising my costs living in this state, but that often isn't the way people think around here. So the truck tolls will go forward, the lawsuit will go forward, and at some point, if the heat becomes too much, we're going to have to watch whether our government decides to get rid of the tolls, which is spend all that money implementing, or start tolling cars too, and that way they avoid the whole discrimination argument.
Yeah, I don't care what they say. I think they... you know, they've seen it at times, if there's money on the table or an opportunity to get money on the table, they'll find a way to do that. The way they throw around the money, burn through the money. There was the articles last week about, you know, Providence obsessed about these bike lanes and having now two-way bike lanes and how much. I mean, they think nothing of spending $500,000, you know, and then one of them, they had to reverse it and do that. The people that are so adamant about the bike lanes, a lot of this also apparently adds to some of the problems with Massachusetts traffic. How, you know, those people that are screaming about that, it's almost like they don't deal in reality. When you take out lanes of travel for traditional traffic, and I think it should be majority rules, whether people like it or not, most people still just, you know, they travel in their own car and they don't travel by bike, or they don't travel with public transportation, what have you. And when you start to take out those lanes and think you're going to force people into it, I don't think it's going to happen. I also wanted to ask you, Justin Katz, in this morning's Providence Journal, it's political scene, and they have expect to hear a lot more from Raimondo soon. And they talk about, you know, fresh off her re-election, she assumed the duty of the Democrat Governor Association, and now that she is stepping down from that, she's going to start speaking out more about whether it be, you know, impeachment or who she's going to support and Medicare for All and everything. You know what else just strikes me from that is I almost get the sense that I don't think she's held accountable enough, that the amount of things that need work. But I you get the sense from the Raimondo people that they feel it's like, you know, mission accomplished, and, you know, now she can just use her remaining time. Like, how is she going to fill the void of not being head of the National Governors Association? She's going to get involved with the race for 2020. It's still insurmountable. You know, we talk about empty buildings. No one even talks about the empty Superman building anymore, except for yesterday, somehow somebody thought they saw somebody on top of the building. It proved to be false. But empty buildings, Providence is still a wreck. The school system, there's a fundamental problem on people aren't building on the 195 land. But Raimondo, to me, she only wants to take part, like, in the ribbon cutting. I think her days of anything that might be considered, like, tough, she just has no appetite for it.
That's been increasingly clear, and I think you put your finger on it. The question is, why is she getting away with it? It's sort of the question of, why is David Cicilline getting away with being a national hitman for the far left Democrats? it is mysterious, and one wonders how much it has to do with her army of PR people, many of them who have been hired from the local news.
That's true.
News reporters. So what you see is the news media and the politicians are all on the same side ideologically, and so they almost don't even catch the obvious questions sometimes. Why am I worried about whether the governor is going to comment on the 2020 race? Why is that even a concern? Why shouldn't I be asking her about, you know, the inability of students to read in Providence? I mean, that seems like something that the governor shouldn't be able to get away with. You know, at every, you know, you see the climate folks hound her at every meeting, trying to get her to promise to do things she clearly wants to do anyway. And that ought to be what the news journalists are doing, saying, well, okay, while I've got you here, let me ask you about the scores in Providence or this other thing or over here or the Wexford building not having tenants or, you know, that sort of thing. And it is, I think to some degree, it gets back to that. The journalists are picking up on the idea that the national scene is what the people who read political news are more interested in, as a general rule. And so they're letting that plays into Raimondo's focus, which we've been saying for months is national at this point.
You know what else I just want to touch on before we move on to our next topic? And again, folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. Our segment is Political Monday. Justin Katz, managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com. Unsolicited. I was speaking recently, just like to say in the past couple of weeks, with two people that if I said their names, you would know them. They're major Rhode Island business leaders and owners of companies. And they employ a lot of people. And just separately, because it was two completely separate occasions. But something they touched on is one of them said to me, and he just framed it so perfectly, he said, I'm the spokesperson for the company. He said, the state has become that if there's an ad in the paper, or just, I should say, a mention, not an ad, or just a quick mention in an article that says the state is adding so-and-so as a spokesperson for a certain department, and it's a six-figure salary, and no one even blinks anymore. He said they're being receiving a job that no company would give them in the private sector. And why is it that every single one of those departments needs a spokesperson? And he said, you know, and I'm the spokesperson. And he started to go off a little bit, but even said, you know, he tied it into sports and said, you know, once a week, Bill Belichick, or more than that, actually, has to go in front of the microphones. And he's the spokesperson for the team and address the media. Like, and he, you know, he's not wrong. And he was asking me about it. And I said, you're exactly right. We've almost become immune whenever we do see. And I'll give the Journal credit. I mean, Ted Nesi and Ian Donis, but especially the Journal or Dan McGowan. But they'll list so-and-so moves over to this agency, and they're going to be the new added to the staff, PR, communication, and they're going to receive, you know, $89,000 or $94,000 or $5,000, whatever it is. And then, never mind, you know, you get the vacation, you get the free health care, all those things, and therefore it's worth so much more. If you look at the job, or in the Providence Journal, what's left of it, the business section, and then they'll post certain. And he's right. You never see anything like that. There's no companies that are hiring people into that. And yet it has now become commonplace with these people that, and as you know, the Journal picked off, the Raimondo picked off some high profile people for the Journal, gave them very high paying, cushy jobs as spokespeople. And that's one way to just kind of get rid of, like, an aggressive journalist.
It is. And when that became a real pattern across, it's not just Raimondo. It's David Cicilline's done it. Even Lieutenant Governor McKee, I mean, hire journalists. Once you've changed the economic landscape so that every single journalist, whether they're intending it right now or not, has to have it in the back of their mind that part of their career path could be a six-figure job working for the state government. That changes. It has to change. We're human. It changes the way people think to some degree. There's some punch that's pulled, except for maybe from the more irascible old school journalists who are, you know, they're retiring and moving on to other things at this stage in their careers. But that has to change the dynamic. And it is shockingly different from the private sector. I mean, I'm sure major companies have marketing teams built in, but very often they are certainly mid-sized companies will just hire PR firms when they're needed. And the thing of it is the government does that too. I mean, we hear all the time of, I was at Mike Rea, who was a spokesman for Raimondo Political, and Raimondo as governor is now with a private company doing yep. business with the state.
Yes.
So they've got all these, this in-house talent, so to speak. Plus they also give some business to the PR firms to help them as well. It's really, and I've been noticing lately that the news often, Ted Nesi's been notably different on this because he has his business-focused show, but the news is very often almost like a newsletter about what's going on in government more than, hey, we're reporting what's going on in your community. Businesses don't get a whole lot of free interviews. It happens periodically, less and less, though. And it becomes government promotion is what all news becomes about, and partly because it's easy because the government's paying people all this hundreds of thousands of dollars to push out news and information. One way this I found this really striking a decade or so ago, my wife was working for a private school doing really amazing things with not a lot of money, a lot of lower income families from the Navy base, and they would put out a press release or somebody would try and they'd get no coverage. Meanwhile, you've got multiple six-figure people over at the State Department of Education whose job it is to go and promote public schools. It just seemed like a very striking contrast to how it all operates. And I think that's part of what you're seeing in business. And it gets particularly worrisome as the government moves into private ventures, as we've been discussing on this call. Wexford, you've got a state government now essentially subsidizing and becoming a partner in office space and business innovation. You could talk about the stadium, the soccer stadium as well, something similar. The gambling, that's a state run business. Marijuana is going to be the same kind of thing. As the state becomes more and more like acting like a private investment organization, it becomes more and more worrying that they bring to bear all this extra PR heft paid for with our money.
That is exactly right. And Justin, before I let you go, I'd like you to touch on the Rhode Island Center for Freedom and Prosperity. Tell us about this transportation climate initiative regarding the gas tax.
Well, but it's essentially a second attempt at what the state's been doing with a regional greenhouse gas initiative called REGI, where basically they're going to impose a new tax. They call it they'll call it an allowance that gasoline distributors have to purchase, but it's really a tax that could increase gas taxes by we're estimating about 24 cents on the gallon right now. Basically, the northeastern states will set up a private organization to impose this tax. They cycle it back so that they can fund green energy projects. It's not really clear with REGI where the money is actually going. At the end of the day, some of it gets filtered through our e-commerce for their self-promoting green investment stuff. We're going to be hearing on the 17th. There will be a memorandum of understanding released from all the states that are probably going to participate in this, and it's starting to look like the governor is going to put Rhode Island in this thing. This gas tax, the TCI, is a tax without legislative approval. That seems to be the way things are going, and so what we're hoping is over the next few months, as the public's allowed to comment, at the very least, we require our General Assembly, our legislators, to decide whether we're going to impose another gas tax, hopefully to avoid any more of these lawsuits like we're seeing with truckers and with the sports gambling, where the government just goes ahead and does things without legal authority and creates this situation where people have to find standing in order to sue. But that's where we're going, and there will be a lot more information about it in the coming weeks.
Folks, he is the managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com. It's Justin Katz. Justin, excellent as always. We'll talk to you again.
Great to talk to you, John.
All right, folks, there it is. Justin Katz, Political Monday on this Monday. Good afternoon, one and all.